completely disrupted the rest of the economy. So it's been very far from a far leftist government.
Award-winning investigative journalist Alan Nairn speaking to us from Jakarta, Indonesia. Alan has won some of the most prestigious honors in journalism. He's a two-time winner of the George Polk Award and a recipient of the R.F. Kennedy Journalism Award, as well as the Alfred I. DuPont Columbia Award. To see all of our coverage on the crisis in Venezuela, go to democracynow.org. Special thanks to Park City Television for hosting us here in Utah this week. We'll continue our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival tomorrow. Democracy Now! Is accepting applications for a full-time, one-year paid news fellowship. Go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Sam Alkoff, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Sharina Nadura, Tamari Astudio, and Libby Rainey. Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Tune in to democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. It is 5 o'clock. KBOO Evening News is coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor One Voice, an evening on Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church in Portland. The One Voice event features a film screening of Unaccompanied, Alone in America, a documentary about immigrant children who have been separated from their parents while seeking refuge in the U.S., as well as performances by Jennifer Berezin and Chris Webster. This is a benefit for Immigration Counseling Service, Oregon's oldest nonprofit immigration law firm. Again, that's One Voice, Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church, 4525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. Tishy Nahosa is the featured performer at the February 15th concert. Singer-songwriter Tishy Nahosa's songs are a blend of Americana, country, Latino, and pop. She has been a featured artist at the White House, Austin City Limits, and a Prairie Home Companion. Again, Tishy Nahosa appearing on the PFS stage on Friday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church, located at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a Multnomah County judge has dismissed a lawsuit filed by activist Teresa Reiford against the city.
A polar vortex spreads across the central U.S.
And in international news, the situation in Venezuela continues to escalate.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, January 30th, 2019. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Emily Gresham Beamer. KBOO News poet Dan Raphael learned some things in the last week.
1. Workers still have power. Longer airport lines, LaGuardia shut down a few hours, convinced the rich to make Trump end the shutdown and release the hostages. 2. Nancy Pelosi has great strength and savvy and is still capable of being non-corporate. 3. Trump is even dumber and more arrogant than I thought. The heads of U.S. intelligence agencies that he appointed said Trump is wrong about Korea, Iran, ISIS, and others, and today Trump tweets that the CIA is naive. 4. My Senator Ron Wyden is against free speech, voting to advance a bill sanctioning protesters of Israel's treatment of Palestine. What did I get wrong about him? 5. The polar vortex is just not normal. Minus 60 degrees? Weather may never be normal again, and we all need some normal, things positive and dependable. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
A lawsuit by local community activist and mayoral candidate Teresa Rayford has been dismissed by a Multnomah County judge. Teresa was arrested at a 2015 Portland protest against police violence and says she was targeted for being an organizer with Don't Shoot PDX. A jury agreed that her arrest was unlawful and all charges against her were dropped in 2016. She then filed a lawsuit against the city for $500,000 for wrongful arrest, racial profiling, and targeting her as an organizer. She said she would use the money to fund her bid to replace Ted Wheeler as mayor of Portland. Multnomah County Circuit Judge Leslie Bottomley dismissed the case on Monday, but Rayford and her attorney say they plan to appeal.
A contentious school board meeting last night in Portland led to a decision to suspend an agreement with the city to increase the number of police officers in Portland public schools. Voted on back in December, the contract was to expand the presence of Portland police patrolling PPS facilities, adding 9 officers and shouldering the cost of $1.2 million on the district. For 2 decades, the Portland Police Bureau has provided officers free of charge to the district. The agreement for PPS to pay the department was derided by students, parents, and local activists who had petitioned for more time and opportunities to make their case against the agreement. Debate within those communities has centered on this measure increasing the perception of criminality while also leading to the actual criminalizing of youth in the school system, especially racially and economically marginalized students. Sometimes referred to as the school-to-prison pipeline, increased police presence in schools has been argued to lead to the disproportionate criminalizing of behavior by youth of color. Marginalized youth are already disproportionately targeted for and affected by Oregon's harsh youth minimum sentencing laws enforced under Measure 11.
Last year, Oregon's carbon emissions rose once again. On Friday, Oregon lawmakers met to discuss reductions in the state's carbon emissions. New cap and trade legislation is expected to be released by Oregon legislators later this week. Cap and trade refers to the capping or limiting of carbon emissions and the establishment of emissions credits, which may be purchased by certain industries if their emissions caps are reached. The proposed plan would gradually reduce the allowed emissions in the cap-and-trade system. In 2018, similar legislature failed to pass, but State House Speaker Tina Kotek, a Democrat, and Senate President Peter Courtney, also a Democrat, have vowed to see the bill become law this session. As the effects of climate change continue to impact the lives of Oregonians more every year, the bill's passage has become a central issue for many across the state. But some groups, including the Democratic Socialists of America, oppose the bill, saying that there needs to be a cap on carbon emissions with no trade component.
New health care bills are being introduced in the Oregon State Legislature. Several of these bills aim to bring down the costs of prescriptions and treatments. HB 2696 would create a drug cost review commission to gather data and look into putting a cap on the maximum payment rates by patients who need medicine. Another House bill being introduced this session would allow pharmacies to import prescription drugs wholesale from Canada in order to reduce costs. And a third House bill would require that pharmacists substitute brand name drugs with generics whenever possible. Meanwhile, in the Oregon State Senate, a bill has been introduced which would increase consumer protection around so-called step therapy. In this practice, patients are prescribed, sometimes unknowingly, the most cost-effective medication before being offered other options. As a practice, step therapy affects patients changing providers who face more barriers to continuing previous treatments. In this scenario, patients would be held responsible for proving the effectiveness of the prior, costlier treatments and managing their own care. The proposed bill would provide more protection for patients to continue their prescribed treatments.
Yesterday, an Oregon State Senate committee heard testimony on Senate Bill 256, which would make permanent an existing 10-year drilling moratorium set to expire next year. The bill would also prohibit any drilling infrastructure, including large drilling platforms, from crossing state waters. The bill hasn't faced any opposition, and sponsors expect bipartisan support. A year ago, the Trump administration proposed allowing oil and gas drilling off the coasts of Oregon and Washington for the first time, and offering new leases in all other offshore areas. Five Oregon coastal cities have adopted resolutions opposing offshore drilling, and Governor Kate Brown has issued an executive order making opposition to offshore drilling a state policy.
Climate justice activists in the Seattle area are cheering a victory this week as the King County Council passed an ordinance Monday evening that puts a six-month moratorium on new fossil fuel infrastructure. The measure does not include prohibitions on federally regulated pipelines or rail lines, but will update zoning and permitting to prevent new fossil fuel storage, processing, or compressor facilities in the Seattle area. More than 100 people signed up to testify before the panel, according to 350 Seattle. Supporters of the measure said that Councilmember Kathy Lambert tried to slip in a possible loophole on behalf of fossil fuel companies, but it was voted down. The temporary building ban gives the county's executive's office time to study the impacts of expanding pipelines. The office will also study the impacts of constructing coal export terminals and other big fossil fuel projects proposed in the county over the last few years.
Record cold in the form of a polar vortex is hitting a large part of the U.S. right now. Some meteorologists who study weather patterns say the climate change is having an impact. The melting of the Arctic ice has led to Arctic temperatures being carried down the jet stream to many parts of North America. In Chicago today, the wind chill has dropped to the temperatures as low as 75 below zero Fahrenheit, and that is expected to continue throughout the weekend. January of last year also brought record-breaking cold snaps to large parts of the country. Climate scientists have found that as California and Alaska face record-breaking heat in the summer, the increasingly warm ocean temperatures off the West Coast are causing the jet stream over North America to shift. This forces colder temperatures from the Arctic to travel further south and cause increasingly cold weathers in the east.
The level of climate warning carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is forecast to rise by a near-record amount in 2019. This is according to the British government's Office on Climate Change, the Met. The newest report says that the increase is being fueled by the continued burning of fossil fuels and the destruction of forests. This increase will be particularly high in 2019 due to an expected return to El Niño-like conditions. This natural climate variation causes warm and dry conditions in the tropics and restricts plant growth that removes CO2 from the air. Levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere have not reached these levels for at least 3 million years, when the global temperature was 2 to 3 degrees warmer and the sea level was 10 to 20 meters higher than present day. The report recommended that immediate corrective climate action be increased fivefold to limit warming to the 1.5 degrees Celsius rise above pre-industrial levels that scientists advise. But the past 4 years have been the hottest on record, and global emissions are rising again after a brief pause.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the Boo. At 6, it's Keeping It Real. Then at 7, it's Combined Culture Radio. Tonight's weather is patchy fog with a low of 36. Tomorrow's weather has everything. Patchy fog, partly sunny, then a 30% chance of rain, with a high near 50. Today in history, in 1948, Indian political and spiritual leader Mahatma Gandhi, famous for his use of non-violent protest methods, was assassinated by a Hindu extremist who objected to Gandhi's tolerance of Muslims. The quote of the day is from Mr. Gandhi, who, when asked what he thought of Western civilization, replied, "It would be a good idea."
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
Antonio Gonzalez. A signed agreement has let the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indian Reservation launch its first Veterans Service Office. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, it extends an initiative between the state and tribal governments.
The aim is to eventually have a vet center for all nine of the state's tribes. Governor Kate Brown says much is owed to Native American veterans, who enlisted a higher per capita rate than any other demographic.
So it's absolutely critical that tribal members across the state get the services and the benefits to which they are entitled.
Sam Spino, Veteran Services Representative for the Umatilla, says the agreement not only allows his tribe to set up digital records for the first time, it'll also enable better support for many Native vets.
With having an office like this and speaking to somebody who is of the same race of you and who may have gone through the same trials and tribulations that you have gone through, it helps ease that anxiety that you're going to be judged.
The first tribal vet center was established last summer when the governor's office and the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs signed an agreement. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Tribal lands on the northern plains are going through some of the coldest temperatures in decades this week. In many cases, those temperatures are made worse by winds that create life-threatening conditions. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Sisseton, South Dakota is home to the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate. The community in northeast South Dakota had a reported wind chill reading of 71 degrees below zero Tuesday evening. Sisseton Wahpeton tribal lands are in the forecast area of the National Weather Service in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Aberdeen meteorologist Travis Tarver says the dangerous conditions aren't over just yet.
Then again tonight, you know, this dome of cold air just kind of stays over us. And you know, we'll probably have low temperatures this evening, you know, right around 30 below zero over northeast South Dakota, and those wind chills will probably stay in that, you know, 35 to 45 below zero range this evening.
Tarver says temperatures will begin to moderate Thursday with high temperatures around 40 for the weekend. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A judge ruled Tuesday that San Juan County Commissioner Willie Gray Eyes does indeed live in Utah, the Salt Lake Tribune reports. The Navajo Democrat won the seat in the November election. Republican challenger Kelly Laws sued, alleging Gray Eyes did not live in Utah. This was the second time attorneys defended Gray Eyes in court. He was removed from the ballot by the county over questions of his residency, but was reinstated after a court found improper procedures by the county. Gray Eyes and another Navajo man are now a majority on the three-member commission, which has long been dominated by non-Native people in an area where Native Americans represent a majority of the population. In Minnesota, state lawmakers are considering legislation to create a task force on missing and murdered Indigenous women. Supporters of the bill hope the task force will get state, federal, and tribal agencies to work together to remove barriers and create a database to track missing and murdered Indigenous women. Native women spoke in support of the bill Tuesday before the House Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Finance and Policy Division. The bill was approved and sent to the House Ways and Means Committee. New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham signed an order Tuesday for the state to join the U.S. Climate Alliance and embrace goals set by the Paris Agreement. The order creates a state climate change task force for agencies to contribute to a climate strategy. The order seeks for New Mexico to build clean energy, limit waste, and prevent climate change impacts on nature and people. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The top prosecutor in the city of Baltimore announced today that the people in Baltimore will no longer be prosecuted for marijuana possession. The prosecutor said that no one who is serious about public safety can honestly say that spending resources to jail people for marijuana use is a smart way to use the city's limited time and money. However, the Baltimore Police Commissioner responded that Baltimore police will continue to make arrests for legal marijuana possession unless and until the state legislature changes the law. The vast majority of Baltimore residents are arrested for marijuana are Black, and studies across the countries have shown that Black people are disproportionately targeted for drug arrests and convictions.
Amnesty International singles out digital tourism giants for profiting from war crimes by offering services to Israel's illegal settlements. This is the Middle East Minute.
I'm Esty Chandler for the Middle East Minute Plus. Amnesty International has singled out digital tourism giants Airbnb, Booking.com, Expedia, and TripAdvisor for profiting from war crimes by offering services to and in Israel's illegal settlements. Amnesty's report, released yesterday, titled Destination Occupation 2019, documents the complicity of digital tourism companies in Israeli war crimes. The report explains, in doing business with settlements, all four companies are contributing to and profiting from the maintenance, development, and expansion of illegal settlements, which amount to war crimes under international criminal law. The report further accuses the four tourism giants of contributing to violations of human rights law and acting in direct contradiction with their own corporate standards through their promotion of Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territories, and criticizes support for Israeli tourism for normalizing and legitimizing to the public what is recognized under international law as an illegal situation. Amnesty denounces Israel, describing its construction of thousands of new housing units as a flagrant disregard for international law, and urges governments worldwide to take action to regulate companies or activities over which they have control. Highlighting the impact of Israeli activity on Palestinians, the report says, quote, Palestinian civilians continue to be subjected to forcible displacement, the confiscation of their land and natural resources, the demolition of their homes, properties, and infrastructure, and restrictions on their movement. This has a devastating impact on Palestinians' rights to an adequate standard of living, to work, to housing, to health, and to education, and has progressively crippled the Palestinian economy. End quote. This has been the Middle East Minute Plus, a joint project of KPFK and Jewish Voice for Peace.
The tension between the U.S. and Venezuela continues to grow, with Donald Trump echoing former President George W. Bush's statement about Iraq, calling the Venezuelan oil, quote, our oil. Yesterday, Washington announced fresh sanctions on Venezuela, targeting its state-run oil company. Meanwhile, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro announced today that he is willing to sit down for talks with the opposition so that they can talk for the sake of Venezuela's peace and its future. At the same time, the Venezuelan Supreme Court, many who are loyal to Maduro, imposed a travel ban and froze the assets of self-declared interim president Juan Guaido. Mr. Guaido called on Venezuelans to stage a two-hour walkout from their homes and workplaces today in protest of President Maduro's policies. In just one day of anti-government protests last week, nearly 700 people were detained by security forces, and over 40 people are believed to have been killed.
On Sunday, the United Arab Emirates announced the winners of its annual Gender Balance Index Awards. Ironically, all four winners were men. Many were baffled at the Persian Gulf state's complete lack of gender diversity at a ceremony dedicated to the very issue. According to Human Rights Watch, though the UAE has made strides in recent years toward gender equity, instituting, for example, a 50% quota for women in the national legislature, LGBTQ and women's rights are still largely unrecognized by the Emirates. Sunday's ceremony revealed the country's goals for gender equality are still far from satisfied.
Coming up next, we have a special report from 420 Drug War News, featuring the first part of an interview with Congressmember Barbara Lee about the Cannabis Caucus.
It's the 420 Drug War News, and the following is provided courtesy of the San Francisco Chronicle.
Here's Tal Copen interviewing Congresswoman Barbara Lee.
We're joined by Oakland Congresswoman Barbara Lee, who was recently appointed as co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we start by just talking about why that's significant. You're the first person of color and woman of color ever to be co-chair of this caucus. Is that right?
Yes. You know, I've worked on these issues for many, 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 many years from a variety of standpoints and points of views. One is just in terms of medicinal marijuana. My late mother had very difficult problems with her knees, and somehow she learned about a lotion that would take away the pain in her knee. And that lotion did. Lo and behold, it was a medicinal marijuana lotion. And then I started looking at other people who had a lot of pain, a lot of ailments. And because California had passed medical marijuana, they were beginning to use medicinal marijuana for illnesses, and it was working. And so I said, wait a minute, we have got to do something. And so that began my work around trying to help raise awareness about medical marijuana and the benefits of it. Secondly, as an African-American woman who has raised two sons and have two grandsons, and I understand what the whole pathway from school to prison and that pipeline and what that looks like. Mm-hmm. A lot of that pathway involves being arrested and being charged with misdemeanor marijuana offenses. And many of these young people, unfortunately, for nonviolent offenses, get charged and they go to jail. Mm-hmm. And so it's not fair, because these laws are unjust. And when you look at, for instance, the discrepancy and disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, again, it's a huge injustice when you look at who gets convicted and who gets charged. And it's the same with marijuana. So the justice aspect of my Marijuana Justice Act and my work is extremely important, so that we can really help young people move forward with their lives and not be charged with these minor misdemeanors that ultimately lead to destroying their lives.
You know, when we talk about marijuana today, when you think about how it's portrayed in pop culture these days, how many states have started to just legalize it entirely, move to decriminalize it. You know, the other day, William Barr was testifying in his confirmation hearing for Attorney General, and both Cory Booker and Kamala Harris asked him about marijuana policy, which Jeff Sessions, his predecessor, really wanted to roll back some of states' ability to regulate this, and Barr said he's not interested in that. It's almost the Obama-era policy of sort of leaving it to the states. When you think about it, you know, a lot of the politicians who have been on the leading edge of this up here have been white. And you think about how it's portrayed in pop culture, it's almost a recreational drug. And, you know, bringing this back, you mentioned when you were announced as co-chair that you really want to make this about criminal justice reform in a lot of ways. I mean, do you think that the racial politics of marijuana have sort of gotten lost as it's become much more widely accepted?
I don't think it's racial politics so much as it is a systemic racism, an institutional racism and injustice in our criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the numbers of African Americans who are charged with marijuana crimes and who go to jail for nonviolent offenses and whose lives have been destroyed, it's clear that it's black and brown people. Mm-hmm. And so there's a real institutional and legal bias. And that's what we have to really focus on and unravel. And when you look at who's in prison, who's in jail, whose lives have been shattered by marijuana charges, who is it? It's black young people. It's brown young people. And so we have to stop that. And so this is part of an overall criminal justice reform effort that I've been mounting for years now. Mm-hmm. And I think now, as an African-American woman, as a co-chair of the caucus, the Cannabis Caucus, my goal is to get more people of color really involved in the issues. And they're legitimate. I mean, we have issues around regulation. We have issues around making sure that underage young people don't, see this as just a recreational effort and, interrupt their school work. And, so there are a lot of issues that we have to deal with. But states have passed it, and more states are going to pass it. And it's so important for African Americans to really be part of this process.
And there's a real concern as some of these laws are being passed about the ways the laws are being structured to benefit, big corporations or some of the laws are written with people with marijuana experience must be the ones who get the licenses. Is there also a concern about, as it becomes more accepted in society, about minorities and disadvantaged communities being sort of left out of this process of legalizing it?
Yeah, and that's why I have an equity bill that really mm-hmm. Says that Because right now, for example, I think it's maybe 1% of the licenses have been granted to African Americans or former people who have been impacted by the unjust laws. And so we need some equity in the industry and provide first priority, for example, for those who have been convicted of misdemeanors, and that's part of the bill that I have, and to make sure that there is some parity and some equity, and we're going to have to do a little bit more maybe, such as help figure out how to finance startup businesses for those who want to set up shop and set up a business, because it's a very lucrative business. So those who have been blocked from a pathway into a job or into a business because of marijuana charges, that barrier needs to be removed. And we need to not only remove the barrier, but we need to have some incentives and some help and some support for them to be able to establish their businesses and issue the licenses in the priority, in that priority, say it, you know, and what my bill actually requires that.
And, you know, as we move into a Democratic majority in the House where, you know, there's a new power center, what lessons can be learned from California and from the Bay Area in terms of approaching this issue?
I think a lot of lessons can be learned because we've struggled with this for many years. In my own city, for example, we have an office that really reviews the applications for licenses and tries to prioritize those living in the zip codes where the marijuana charges were the highest, or those who have been charged with marijuana offenses are given priority. And there are a lot of difficulties, a lot of issues that have to be unpacked. But I think if any place that it can be done right, it's in California, and then, of course, in my district. Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's important, and going back to my Marijuana Justice Act, that we, first of all, allow, and we're doing that in many areas in California, those who have been charged with misdemeanors, that their records be expunged automatically.
Once again, that was U.S. Congresswoman Barbara Lee, courtesy of the San Francisco Chronicle. I'm Dean at DrugTruth.net.
As an effect of the implementation of a new Trump immigration policy, 55-year-old Carlos Gomez Perdomo of Honduras was sent back to